Hello, I'm Maria from the Social Change Agency, and today I'm talking to Ayla Pullinger, Individual Experience Manager at AfriKids. In this podcast, we're going to talk about how to reach new audiences as part of your UK at Match appeal. AfriKids is the leading organization for child rights in Northern Ghana, and their work includes projects in education, healthcare, and child protection. AfriKids ran a UK at Match appeal, Time to Shine, from December 2018 to March 2019 to raise funds to support children in Ghana to complete their education. So welcome, Ayla, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell us a bit more about your Time to Shine appeal?
Yes, so this was sort of the first appeal of its kind that we'd ever done as an organisation. A lot of our fundraising is grants focused, and we're trying to sort of build up our public fundraising side of things. So this was a great opportunity to sort of launch that side of growth. Yeah, the appeal was led by June Sapong, who was a celebrity ambassador who we got to come along and support us through the appeal. And she's now gone on to become a sort of AfriKids ambassador long term, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And she had some very obvious links with the cause, her being of Ghanaian heritage herself and doing quite a lot of charity work previously. So there was an obvious connection there. And we had, as part of our appeal, a BBC Radio 4 appeal. So we'd already secured that before we got Aid Match. But obviously aligning those two opportunities was massive for us. So we got June on board to present that appeal. But she also came on board to do, we did a radio morning with her, where she went on various different regional stations around the UK. She also did a couple of TV appearances with us. So she was on Sky News Sunrise talking about the appeal. She was also on ITV News London in the evening, 6 o'clock spot, which is pretty good. And then she also hosts a programme on Sky, her own programme called The Pledge, and she also spoke about us on there. And there was a really good story because she came out to Ghana during the appeal, so in January, and so she had loads of her own stories to tell. So it was very personal for her. So she was sort of front and centre and really led it, which we thought was really helpful because she, you know, it wasn't our voice all the time. She could bring her own voice to it. And yeah. Stuff like our sort of kickoff press release, we sort of took it on an angle of her story.
Mm-hmm.
So as I mentioned, yeah, we had a BBC Radio 4 appeal, which was a great opportunity to boost the reach of our Time to Shine appeal and also give BBC Radio 4 listeners an extra opportunity to sort of double their donations. We kicked off before Christmas, so we had quite a focus on sort of, yeah, Christmas in the month of December. We sold what we would call giving gifts, so alternative Christmas gifts of making a donation in someone else's name. And we also did a lot of promotion to our own networks through social media and our small mailing list, which is now growing, but it's very small, and I'll talk about that in a bit, I'm sure. So yeah, we kind of, that Christmas was a real focal point for us, and it was a great time to sort of kick off at that time of giving. We had various events during the 3 months. So one of our communications partners and a patron of AfriKids, Baroness Linda Chalker, she secured us an opportunity to host an event at the House of Lords, which was a great opportunity to get various people in the room to talk about sort of the future of Ghana and the role that education plays within that. So we had, yeah, that as one event. We had various different quiz nights, which were held by community fundraisers of ours, again, to quite sort of cold new audiences. We were invited to come and be the recipient of donations at one of the Guilty Feminist recordings at Christmas. Oh. So again, a completely new audience for us in the room, and just we had an opportunity to speak for a couple of minutes at that. And then June also hosted a kind of evening with her to talk about her experiences in Ghana with some of our closest supporters, and that was a nice opportunity for her voice again to come out. And then, yeah, community fundraising I mentioned briefly, but one example, particularly successful example, was a group called the Zari Challengers, who were a group of families who ended up coming out to Ghana in April, and they fundraised during the appeal, and they ended up raising about £20,000, all of which was matched. But again, I'll touch on that in a minute. That was a a big opportunity for us to reach new audiences was through those community fundraisers and through our own networks.
Mm-hmm. So I know that during your appeal you managed to reach new supporters, and 94% actually of your appeal donors were new to you. That's incredibly successful. Well done. And what was your approach in reaching these people? Can you tell us about that? Mm-hmm. And what was the impact of UK Aid Match on this, do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think UK Aid Match and the opportunity to double donations was a huge incentive for a lot of people to give, especially for new supporters, because it just makes your support go so much further, obviously, and it just kind of is a no-brainer that if you can give £5 and that becomes £10, it kind of lowers the bar a little bit, I guess, but your impact is the same. So I think that was a really big incentive was the doubling opportunity. I think a lot of our new donors came through, or what we would classify as new donors, new supporters, came through our community fundraisers, and that really helped with our reach, basically. Mm-hmm. Is people going out, telling our story, raising on our behalf, because they became a sort of extension of our team and what we were doing, and getting people to be ambassadors for the organisation. So a big group of the new supporters that we had came through our Zara Challenge fundraisers, who came up with the concept that they would get Time to Shine branded shoelaces and take them to that. So it was mainly led by the kids, so it was an opportunity for them to be entrepreneurial and to drive the fundraising themselves. So they then took them to their schools, they took them to their local sports clubs, they got celebrity sportsmen to take photos and promote them on social, and they through the sales of those laces, and they ended up selling about 1,500 pairs.
Wow.
So a lot of those supporters that come into that were people who donated in that way, so they were exposed to the appeal and AfriKids through our community fundraisers. Yeah, I mentioned sort of getting people to be ambassadors for the organisation, so that was a big thing that we pushed forward, was having this opportunity to really engage the people in our closest network to be champions for our cause and for the appeal itself, and for them to have something really tangible to go to people within their networks. Like, this is an opportunity, it's a finite amount of time they have, everything they raise during that time is going to be matched, and all the rest of it. So I think, again, having other people to be our eyes and ears on the ground. The appeal gave us the opportunity to do quite a lot on digital channels.
Mm.
So historically, we've got social media channels, and they sort of have not been a priority in terms of rather than just, we just keep them up. We put content out there, but not with a huge amount of strategy behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And after GDPR, we had lost sort of two-thirds maybe of our mailing list.
Mm.
And it was already quite small then, so we only had about 800 people on that going into the appeal, which obviously was a bit nerve-wracking.
Of course.
But yeah, we kind of thought about how to utilize digital as best as possible. We had some Facebook advertising that we gave a go during the appeal, so that really helped with our kind of our reach.
Mm-hmm.
But also just putting lots of content out there, getting our communications partners talking about us, creating that kind of buzz around it, and trying to engage supporters sort of on multiple channels. And then obviously our BBC Radio 4 appeal, we got almost 200 new donors through that.
Mm.
And again, for lots of organisations, that doesn't sound like a lot, but for us, our individual givers are always in the hundreds, and if not less. So that was huge for us. And, it's an opportunity for us to then carry on that journey with those people and look to engage them in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that was really great for our reach.
Yeah, great.
I guess the only other one is to say we got 5 new major donors during the period as well, including a first gift of £50,000, which again, as an organisation for us, that's a really big gift.
Yeah.
So, they're small numbers, but considering the number of major givers that we already had on our portfolio, that's a huge uplift in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was down to people being our ambassadors, going out to their networks and approaching them on our behalf, but also having a really good sale point of, you know, an opportunity to match your gift.
Great. And what did you learn during your UK at Match Appeal that you will be using in the future, especially on reaching new donors?
Mm-hmm. Probably a really obvious one, but just start early. Mm-hmm. Start as early as possible. We found that we, on reflection, it took us a while to build momentum with our supporters, and had we had more time to sort of prepare them ahead of launch, then we probably could have got that momentum going already once, you know, within the first few weeks of the appeal starting and really kicked off and hit the ground running. So I'd say starting as early as possible to engage your networks and building them into advocates for the cause and appeal. I think we were perhaps a little bit shy to kind of just pick up the phone and and speak to people because, yeah, for various reasons. But I think just, yeah, getting out and starting as early as possible. For us, being the first time that we'd ever done anything like this, I think quite a simple one again, but being really realistic during the planning stage. So, you know, really understanding what the capacity of the team is. We're a small team here of 10, half of which are sort of part-time. So, you know, we don't have a lot of human resource. We don't have a lot of budget either. So just being really realistic about, you know, the team's capacity, what extra hours we'll need, what, you know, if you need extra pairs of hands and volunteers to come in and support with the more menial things. Yeah, I mean, it's not sort of reaching new supporters, but just how to process and their donations and make sure that their experience is the best possible by making sure that all of your systems and processes are efficient and working and they're ready for that influx of donations and the extra data you're going to be processing and all of that, which sounds really boring, but does often hold you up.
Absolutely.
So just being sort of, yeah, being prepared ahead of time and thinking about, you know, we ended up having a lot more donors and generating a lot more funds during that period than we thought. So it just looking at the scale of how we could actually process that data and being prepared for the boom that we did have. I think I touched on it before talking about sort of digital, but just the power of social media for us. Yeah, I kind of said before, but we didn't really have a strategy around our social before. It wasn't hugely sort of respected as a channel internally, I would say. But seeing the impact that that had and the reach that we could get and the referrals. So I think it was, yeah, 66% of our referrals to our webpage were from social. So yeah, it was driving traffic to our website where people could donate.
That's a big number.
Which is great. So I think it was just, yeah, valuing that more. And it's something, you know, now I'm massively focused this year on our digital fundraising and how we can improve our presence on digital and also be utilising things like Facebook ads to generate new leads and get to new supporters. So it was just a great opportunity to sort of be putting content out there, seeing what happens, testing, using data to then inform what was working. And all of this was totally new to us, which seems like the very basics for lots of people, but just having the opportunity to test and sort of iterate and learn, all of that was really helpful. And yeah, that's something that we've built into our day-to-day processes now. So that kind of testing and learning on social. I think we learned about the power of stories and just being really donor-centric. So we sort of ended up reshaping our messaging quite a lot. So we'd sort of done a round of it with you guys and then confirmed what that messaging was going to be. And then two of us here in the team actually went to the International Fundraising Conference sort of last October or November. And it really opened our eyes a lot to the power of storytelling, the need to tap into the emotional heart of donors. So we ended up coming back to our messaging template, which was really helpful to have that structure. Just looking at some parts of it from a different angle and trying to make it more personal, more real, more in touch with the people who we're supporting rather than sort of high level strategic stuff. So just making the language more accessible and yeah, sort of trying to make it more emotional. So I think that was really helpful just in making our communications more accessible to the general public, and therefore attracting new supporters in that way, and that we were creating more interesting content than we had previously, that was more open to sort of the general public, not just people who were already interested in AfroKids, because historically we've really just preached to the sort of converted, as in spoken to people in our networks, mm-hmm. whereas this was our opportunity to make ourselves accessible to a public audience and raise awareness for the brand itself. Yeah, I think that was really interesting for us, and we learned a lot, which we're building into what we're doing now. And then, yeah, I guess just the power of the multi-channel approach to reach new audiences, mm-hmm. And make an impact. Having partners talk about us and bringing other voices to the appeal, I think that gave us a lot of credibility and helped our reach. But it was sort of refreshing to, yeah, have other people putting content out about the appeal, which, you know, we'd never done that before. We'd never looked to engage lots of partners like that before. And I think that, you know, we had some feedback from supporters who we know quite well saying, oh, you know, it was really great to see you on Sky News Sunrise or whatever it was. And so realising that is getting out to people, and it gave us credibility within our networks, but obviously it also brought new supporters to us. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think having June as part of that journey was really, really helpful, because she opened up a lot of doors for us, which was cool.
Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give to another organisation trying to reach new donors?
I mean, coming from our experience, I would just say use your networks. Mm-hmm. You can't do it all on your own, especially if you're a small organisation like us. So, and often, as I just said, like your voice isn't the most compelling for lots of audiences. It's sort of better to have other people saying how great you are. Yeah. So, you know, and that could be both celebrity ambassadors, but also supporters who are your ambassadors. So skilling up those people, like we had a new 50k first donation from a completely new supporter, and that came off the back of two of our current supporters taking someone for lunch and pitching them, you know, an opportunity to come and get involved with the organisation, and particularly support Time to Shine. And so it was making sure that those people who were going out and sort of selling our story and, you know, speaking on behalf of us, that they had all the tools that they needed in order to be able to do that in the mm-hmm. best way that they could. And yeah, I guess sort of the way that June as a celebrity supported us to get more coverage and networks, again, that was utilising the networks that we had, and therefore she could then expand that. And again, those community fundraisers that I spoke about earlier, just who is it out there who can help get your message out as far as possible. And again, down to sort of the content, just making, yeah, sort of really shareable, interesting content. And getting your networks to do the work for you. And I think that the appeal in our case gave us the opportunity to try and do that, but it's something that we've learned a lot since then about how to do that better. So it sort of gave us the opportunity to build some foundations on that and to learn, and it's something that we'll build on. But just giving value to whoever comes in contact with your content, so that they're wanting to share it beyond your networks and reach. And then, like, a really obvious one, but really getting into the minds of supporters and being really, really donor centric. So again, making sure that everything adds value to the supporter, making sure that it's not about you, the organization, it's about them, it's about their values, it's about how you're going to support them to change lives. So making sure that it's really empowering for them to come and get involved. But I think that aligning sort of the values of the organisation, trying to align them with audiences who share those values, and demonstrating how you're doing that, you know, people then are buying into what you're all about, a kind of deeper connection. Just those small things.
Very small. And can you tell us what was the biggest challenge during your appeal for you, and how did you overcome it?
I guess it was, for me, looking at the appeal at the beginning was the size of our supporter base and our networks, because yeah, they weren't huge at all, and it wasn't something we hadn't invested a lot in individual giving over the years, so it was sort of completely fresh and new for us. And so it was about then how we can engage the people that we do have to share the appeal as much as they can. So, and opening up those new conversations and new opportunities for us. I think we made the most of it. but yeah, making sure that the small pool of people that we did have with us already were really engaged and willing to share what was going on within their networks and sort of be ambassadors for us. I guess another big challenge was just that we'd never run something like this before.
Mm-hmm.
So we were starting from a position where everything was a learning curve. so yeah, I mean, I think that's good and bad, because in a way it allowed us to be quite flexible, because you know, we could kind of change and make iterations around what we were doing just based on what the outcomes we were seeing were. I mean, it wasn't like we had a very fixed idea of how stuff was going to work. So overcoming it, I think it was just, rather than overcoming it, it's more like how we made it a positive, is like taking note, evaluating, learning, and really utilising the experience to build a good foundation. It wasn't perfect, but it's given us a really good idea of how we can get towards being better. And then I think maybe just, I mean, this is quite an obvious one as well, but preparation time. So we were one of the first organisations to kick off. So we had to sort of go through the due diligence process quite quickly. And then we didn't have a lot of time before kickoff. So I think we always felt like we were slightly chasing our tails from that point onwards. So ideally having a little bit more time between getting the okay, doing the due diligence and then kickoff, so that you can kind of hit the ground running a little bit more.
Yeah, sure.
But again, that was our choice to start in December. We wanted to make sure that we could, our BBC appeal was like at the end of December, so we wanted to make use of the Christmas period and that as well. So yeah, I guess that was our that was our choice.
And one last question, how did running a UK match appeal affect your organisation?
I think for us it was a really great opportunity to collaborate, which sounds ridiculous because we're such a small organisation, but this, it just really pulled everyone together and it became a huge team effort, which yeah, was a lovely sort of atmosphere to be part of. And we had to do, you know, we had to collaborate a lot more than we normally do probably. So it kind of allowed us to like pool our skills together and everyone to almost like step back and look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So even though we are all sort of one man departments, you might say, or even multiple departments with one person, you can still slip into that like siloed working. And I think that the opportunity of coming together and collaborating for us was, you know, something that we're building on now, and I think that we've learned from the success of that and sort of being able to knit opportunities across different income streams and making sure that they were all feeding into each other. That was really beneficial to us and it opened up some opportunities that we wouldn't have got otherwise. So that was, yeah, really exciting. I think it definitely gave us the chance to look at our messaging and sort of general communication styles and improve those, and also how we generate content and learn from that. So very much we wanted to be stories led and yeah, tapping into the emotions of our donors in order to make our content more compelling, which I think we did in parts before, but you know, and over the last sort of couple of years we've been going more towards this stories led communication, and we've come a long way from writing someone's story and then putting case study above it as a title. But I think that seeing you know, doing a multi-channel appeal like this for 3 months gave us the opportunity to sort of build that out a little bit more. So I think that's definitely fed into what we're doing now in the future, and we will do in the future. And yeah, it planted really firm foundations for growth within what we call public fundraising, so anything outside of grants. And so I'm focusing on sort of expanding our individual giving program, but also generally thinking about engagement and how we can get more supporters involved. And then my colleague Katie is working on building our major gifts program up. So it was sort of at the beginning of that sort of journey of growth, and it's given us it's given the team a lot of confidence as we kick that off, having seen what happened with the appeal and how much better it did than we expected. But also it's given us sort of firm foundations and kind of benchmarks to then build on. So yeah, I think it was just a really good boost at the beginning of that growth journey.
Great, thank you. That was really, really interesting and helpful. Thanks for listening to this UK Ed Match podcast. Don't forget that we have more resources on various topics on the UK Ed Match website. And if there's any topic that you'd like us to cover, please send us an email at ucam@thesocialchangeagency.org. Thank you.